Live from the historic parsonage of 19th century gospel minister George Norcross in downtown Carlisle, Pennsylvania. It's Iron Sharpens Iron, a radio platform on which pastors, Christian scholars, and theologians address the burning issues facing the church and the world today. Proverbs 27, verse 17 tells us, "Iron sharpens iron, so one man sharpens another." Matthew Henry said that in this passage, quote, "We are cautioned to take heed whom we converse with, and directed to have in view in conversation to make one another wiser and better." It is our hope that this goal will be accomplished over the next hour, and we hope to hear from you, the listener, with your own questions. Now here's our host, Chris Arnton.
Good afternoon, Cumberland County, Pennsylvania, and the rest of humanity living on the planet Earth, listening via live streaming. This is Chris Arnson, your host of Iron Sharpens Iron, wishing you all a happy Monday on this 10th day of August, 2015. And due to the joy of live radio, I just found out just moments before the broadcast that our guest that we had lined up today, Pamela Newkirk, who is an award-winning journalist and professor of journalism at New York University, she could not participate in today's live interview due to another obligation on Martha's Vineyard regarding a speaking engagement that had its time move to the time allotted for our program. So, therefore, we have to postpone Pamela Newkirk's interview on her book, The Astonishing Life of Oda Benga. That's actually, the title is Spectacle, and the subtitle is The Astonishing Life of Oda Benga, who was a pygmy, if you care to use that tribal term, a young African boy who was kidnapped from Africa in the early 1900s by zoologists and put on display in a monkey cage here in New York in the United States. And it was all done under the guise of science. The evolutionists of the day were a lot more open about their sinister beliefs that members of the black race and other non-white races were closer to the apes in the evolutionary chain. And this horrific story is the topic of the book. And I'm going to be right back after these messages, so don't go away.
Thrivent Financial is not your typical financial services provider. As a membership organization, we help Christians be wise with money and live generously every day. And for the fourth year in a row, we were named one of the world's most ethical companies by the Ethisphere Institute, a leading international think tank dedicated to the creation, advancement, and sharing of best practices in business ethics. Contact me, Mike Gallagher, financial consultant, at 717-254-6433. Again, 717-254-6433 to learn more about the Thrivent Difference.
We know we were made for so much more than ordinary life.
Blending faith, finances, and generosity. That's the Thrivent story.
I'm James White of Alpha and Omega Ministries. The New American Standard Bible is perfect for daily reading or in-depth study. Used by pastors, scholars, and everyday readers, the NASB is widely embraced and trusted as a literal and readable Bible translation. The NASB offers clarity and readability while maintaining high accuracy to the original languages, which the NASB is known for. The NASB is available in many editions, like a topical reference Bible. Researched and prepared by biblical scholars devoted to accuracy, the new Topical Reference Bible includes contemporary topics relevant to today's issues. From compact to giant print Bibles, find an NASB that fits your needs very affordably at nasbible.com. Trust, discover, and enjoy the NASB for yourself today. Go to nasbible.com. That's nasbible.com.
Tired of box store Christianity, of doing church in a warehouse with all the trappings of a rock concert? Do you long for a more traditional and reverent style of worship? And how about the preaching? Perhaps you've begun to think that in-depth biblical exposition has vanished from Long Island. Well, there's good news. Wading River Baptist Church exists to provide believers with a meaningful and reverent worship experience, featuring the systematic exposition of God's Word. And this loving congregation looks forward to meeting you. Call them at 631-929-3512 for service times. 631-929-3512. Or check out their website at wrbc.us. That's wrbc.us.
Welcome back. This is Chris Arnzen, and thankfully our second guest, who was originally supposed to be on for the second hour of Iron Sharpens Iron today, Dr. Clennard Howard Childress. Thankfully, he got my message to fill in for Pamela Newkirk just in time. So our guest will be for both hours, Dr. Clennard Howard Childress, who is the founder of BlackGenocide.org, which is a pro-life website and organization which basically was founded to educate the public in regard to the horrific origins of the abortion industry and Planned Parenthood specifically, which had to do entirely with the racist motives of eliminating or annihilating the black race and other non-white minorities off of the face of the earth gradually through sterilization and abortion. And of course, the founder of that horrific organization that is celebrated today by such individuals as Hillary Clinton and other pro-abortion activists and politicians. Hillary Clinton and others would uphold the founder, Margaret Sanger, as a hero of women's rights when, in fact, she was a Nazi sympathizer before World War II, had members of the Third Reich writing for her magazine, and she made no bones about her racism, and even was the guest speaker at a Ku Klux Klan rally in New Jersey in the earlier part of the 20th century. But it is my honor and privilege to welcome you back to Iron Sharpens Iron, my old friend, Dr. Clennard Howard Childress.
Well, thank you very much for having me. I appreciate I can be here.
Yes, and co-hosting with me for the next 2 hours is a new friend of mine who I had once before on Iron Sharpens Iron, Pastor Ronjor Locke, who is the pastor of First Baptist Church in Brooklyn, Maryland. Pastor Ronjor Locke is a Reformed Baptist pastor and a Southern Baptist congregation, and he is an African-American brother in Christ as well, in addition to my guest, Dr. Childress. And today we are going to be talking about the abortion industry. We're going to be talking about the mystery behind why those in the limelight of the modern-day civil rights movement, those who are considered the modern-day heroes of black activism and so on, seem to be ignoring this very crucial element of life that is to protect the life of the unborn. And it is so great to have you both on the program. And first of all, let me give you a warm welcome for the first time in the studio, although I've interviewed you by phone once before. Let me welcome you into my studio for the first time as a co-host, Pastor Ronjor Locke.
Chris, it's good to be back here. And it's good to be here for the first time in the studio.
Yes, and perhaps you two could say hello to each other.
Well, great to meet you. Hopefully soon in person.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. Thank you very much.
Well, as I was saying at the outset of the program before Dr. Childress, thankfully, by God's mercy, got my message in time to be a part of both hours of this broadcast, we were originally going to be discussing the spectacle, The Astonishing Life of Oda Benge, the book by Pamela Newkirk. Pamela Newkirk was called away into a speaking engagement there in Martha's Vineyard. It was originally scheduled at a later time and got moved to the time allotted for our interview, and that took priority, so we hopefully will have Pamela Newkirk back on our broadcast at some point in the future. But first of all, Dr. Childress, this organization that you have founded and this website that you've established, blackgenocide.org, when did this become something in your mind and heart that was a vital need and a void that needed to be filled? And were you always someone who had a compassion and a passion to defend the life of the unborn?
Well, I believe, like most pastors, I was also guilty of, and that was by design of media and by design of the program itself, of the abortion agenda against the black community. I was basically in the dark about it. I knew abortion existed, of course, but certainly didn't know of a systemic plan to target the African-American community. And about 1995, I think it was, 96, I was invited to Virginia Beach, the home of the 700 Club, to hear a seminar conducted by LEARN, the Life Education Resource Network. It's the largest African-American pro-life network in the country. And to be honest with you, the reason I made it a priority is because I always wanted to be on the campus of the 700 Club. I always appreciated Pat Robertson having an African-American co-host in a time where it was certainly not suitable to do so in the early 70s. That was of a serious relationship, not as a comedian, but... oh, it's a fair to really think about it. Ben Kenchlow unquestionably had a role unprecedented on TV, and more or less it was just something that I thought was very risky by Pat Robertson at the time. Now, I know Pat says some stuff we're not appreciative of, at least. I certainly give him kudos and always will for doing that in such a at a time in America where it certainly was not the thing to do. And not only he's an imposing African-American male. Okay, that's another story. So I get there, and I hear these horrific statistics. At that time, the data was saying 1,452 African-American children are killed each day by abortion. I was just totally stunned. I felt extremely inadequate. I felt gross negligence on my part, that how can I be ministering in the African-American community and not know this. They had doctors there. Hayward Henderson from College, Texas, was there giving much of the medical information, the results of ramifications of women having abortion, which were horrific. And it was almost a mandate in my heart. And funny story about it is, after hearing the Negro Project, Margaret Sanger, just a notorious diabolical plot, sat down with her and Clarence Gamble, the heir of Procter & Gamble, to target the African-American community for abortion. And so I'm listening to all this, and I had to leave early. And it's funny, Johnny Hunter, who is, of course, my dear friend and the national director of LEARN, said to the board of LEARN at that time, well, I guess that's just another brother that just couldn't really handle the issue and doesn't really want to take part in our movement in enlightening African Americans. But the fact of the matter is, me and my wife drove back from Virginia Beach saying, how do we, you know, where do we go from here? We cannot remain presently in the phase of ministry without a generous portion or percentage of that ministry being devoted to the pro-life issue. And so in 2002, that was early, we, you know, gradually we just began increasing and increasing. And of course, getting there, it was due to a Catholic Irish lady knocking on my door, which is how I got to Virginia Beach in the first place, asking me, do I want to be involved in the pro-life movement? Because she had met, which is now my youth director, but she was 13 at that time, in front of a Planned Parenthood abortuary, I call it, and she was just walking by to go home. But Chris approached her and said, you know, you don't want to go into this. She was assuming that she was going to Planned Parenthood. And Sharifa said, oh, no, my pastor already warned me about abortion. And she thought that to be exceptional. And she came, asked me the questions about being more involved. They sent me down to Virginia Beach. And that was the transformation. In 2002, I said, well, you notice that no one is talking about the systemic influence of abortion. No one is talking about Planned Parenthood. No one is talking about Margaret Sanger. No one's talking about how the government is pouring millions of dollars into Planned Parenthood. And I'm really frustrated because I didn't realize, once again, my ignorance, how politicized the abortion issue was, and how it really had at that point become basically a party line issue on, you know, both sides. And of course, if you're African American, as has proved out to been through the years, over 90% of the Democratic presidents, over 90% of our vote goes to them. Barack Obama was 95, Kerry it was 93. And so you recognize you're actually supporting the very party that's facilitating the genocide of African Americans. And I'm saying this is bizarre. So I can't, you know, we're getting into the web age now. And so around 2002, I said I'm going to just create a website just for the information so people could go to it. And I was going to call it Learn, the Life Education Resource Network, and put up all this information. And the young man, Caucasian brother, the young man that traveled with us at times when I was doing the genocide awareness projects more frequently with the Center for Bioethical Reform, they used the 12x4 pictures on the college campuses and set up the display and then have discussion. That is an extremely effective way to engage students, the next generation's leaders, with the issues and the facts of abortion. And he walked up to me and said, well, why do you want to call it Learn? You're always talking about black genocide. Why don't you talk about that? Why don't you call it that? And when he said that, it was like when Mary saw Elizabeth, it seemingly leaped in my spirit that that was the name of the site. And, you know, more or less it certainly, and it stems from the phrase that Jesse Jackson, one time very eloquent and very diligent pro-life speaker, used during the late 70s, that abortion was black genocide. What happens to a mind of a person in the moral fabric of a nation that could abort a baby without a pang of conscience? Where will we be 20 years from today? That's what he said in 1978. And of course, upon wanting to be president and wanting to become entrenched in the Democratic Party, he had to flip-flop and had a completely different position when the time that he was seeking the White House and the favor of the upper echelon of the Democratic Party. So it has been one thing after that, and it's now 2015. The scourge is still very much afflicting African Americans. According to Alan Guttmacher, it's 1,786 per day. 52% of all African American abortions, pregnancies, end in abortion. And here in the city of New York, as you well know, over 60% of African American pregnancies end in abortion. So our work is still yet cut out. It's gotten better. I think it would be extremely worse if it had not been for the incremental involvement of more African Americans in this issue, because you basically have to denounce the Democratic Party and have very little allegiance with their political platform in order to be considered an advocate for life, because they certainly will attack you on your position. And but yet we are gaining ground, and I appreciate the new warriors that are coming alongside.
I'm going to give our email address if anybody listening has a question for Dr. Clennard Howard Childress on the abortion industry, on the infanticide of children, and specifically on black children that is taking place and has been taking place in our nation in increasing numbers. You can email us at chrisarnzen@gmail.com, chrisarnzen@gmail.com. When you're emailing us, please provide your first name, your city and state of residence, and your country of residence if you are outside of the United States, and only remain anonymous if this is involving a personal and private matter. Since we are talking about abortion, obviously, there may be many people that have very private and personal issues that they want to ask about and not be public about it. So feel free to remain anonymous, but please only do so if it involves a personal matter. And Pastor Ron Jorlock, you may feel free at any time to ask our guest a question as well, but I wanted to ask you, as an African-American pastor, has the pro-life movement always been a part of your consciousness, and perhaps you could even tell us something about your upbringing, your family, home life, whether or not you were raised in a Christian home and so on, and when the burden for the life of the unborn came a part of your consciousness.
Sure. For me, my parents, I think I'd said in the last interview, my parents had come to Christ when I was in diapers. So I literally don't remember a time where I wasn't in church on Sunday, where I wasn't, where my parents weren't walking with the Lord and so forth. Because of that, as a child of the 80s, by and large, 80s and 90s, Dobson had been coming out by that time, and he was, of course, one of the front runners in talking about the abortion movement and really galvanizing the evangelical community in the states to be pro-life and to consider the rights of the unborn. And my parents were very much on board with that. They very much supported that movement. And I just grew up in a home where we understood Psalm 139, that we're fearfully and wonderfully made, that the Lord is the one who knits us together in our mother's wombs. And the other thing for me was that I had grown up in a Christian school, and the school that I attended was very much connected and very much involved in political affairs and so forth. They were very diligent in terms of mobilizing families in the church and in the school to think Christianly about the government and to think Christianly about society. So not only did I at home hear on a regular basis about the scriptures and the rights that should be for everyone, in the womb, outside of the womb, from birth to the grave. But I also got that at school as well from teachers and administration that were there who were intent on developing a Christian worldview. So my story is a little bit unique in that this has really been my perspective from day one. But of course, I give thanks to God for his mercy that I really haven't been in a context where I've been trained to think any other way except the way that the scriptures taught.
And Dr. Childress, blackgenocide.org, obviously quite a provocative name for a website. Have to be very careful as a white person myself telling people about it in fear that they may think I am a racist and somehow I'm promoting black genocide, which is obviously farthest thing from the truth. But when did you begin to realize that being such a strong and public and vocal advocate for the life of the unborn was really something that was in opposition to the agenda of many in the modern day black civil rights movement, and I have to stress that.
Yeah, absolutely. And what we all have, the listeners have to, you know, recognize that I often say if abortion was not lucrative, it would not be legal. That without question, the strategy of Margaret Sanger was enacted just very effectively, geniusly, by today's administration of Planned Parenthood, by using what she said in a letter to Clarence Gamble, we should use three or four colored ministers that basically they would be the face of what we would want to do. And that would be introducing sterilization and abortion to the African-American community. That was the long-term plan. She said in the letter that the best way to approach the Negro is through the religious approach. Now, this was fascinating to me in 1938, 37, somewhere around when that letter was written, that she had already done her homework and research on the African-American community and recognized, even to this day, it is certainly not as dominant as it had been, but even to this day, that in the African-American community, they normally look to the cleric or the clergy for leadership. And basically, that's true today. Of course, the emergence of Barack Obama and some others, not basically as impacting as Barack Obama was, but he also recognized early in his career, if he did not have a strong religious component in Chicago and be tied into the pastors, African-American pastors there, he would not have also gone up the scale of political prominence.
Actually, and that backfired on him eventually, though, with Pastor Wright.
Well, it didn't hurt him that much, trust me, but it had to, because people don't know how much Jeremiah Wright was still a part of his life after. That was all a facade. He visited the White House on five or six different occasions after that. That was for us. the public side. So, that's another story altogether. You know what? You can go there. You'll spend the whole time talking about the sham that was put upon African Americans as well as the country, orchestrated by a brilliant man, by the way, Jeremiah Wright. Don't please never think the man is not, you know, he basically borders genius, I'm concerned, but he's just wrong, plain and simple, in his cone theology. He's just wrong, but a brilliant man and an accomplished musician. But the NAACP, the Congressional Black Caucus, the National Action Committee, these are the institutions that were beginning to take the lead politically, and they needed money. When Jesse Jackson realized he could very well be president, needed money. And these groups basically had the connections, had the means, and the silent agenda of decreasing the African-American population and therefore their political influence was very much a part of the table. And I necessarily don't call these people Democrat or Republican, because you had Rockefeller very much believing and embracing that ideology, Carnegie and Mellon. Nelson Rockefeller, who was on the cabinet of Richard M. House Nixon, who, by the way, orchestrated and facilitated the legalization of abortion. So, and who's a Republican? So, more or less, it did, as it developed, it was the Republican Party, the party of Lincoln, the party that was birthed for the sole purpose of ending slavery. Once again, those roots began to be the only means of opposition to abortion, because they were using the idea, the strategy of Margaret Sanger, we will seduce, pay, and corrupt black leadership, and they will go along with this. And this is basically exactly the way it went down. And there's just no way 95% of people, with the abortion being a part of the platform, same-sex marriage being a part of the platform, the opposition to school vouchers being a part of the platform, how in the world are African Americans giving such allegiance to this party? Well, they did exactly what Margaret Sanger did. Control African American leadership, and out of every ethnic group in this country, we unquestionably had a different experience here in our initial introduction to the to America, and therefore the strategy is solely would be different in dealing with African Americans than any other ethnic group. But yet that religious component, which had caused African Americans to be very resilient and being able to basically have, and they were white abolitionists as well as they were black. There were white civil rights workers, as you know, in the 60s that died, gave their lives, that pastor there in Boston, Catholic priest. But the fact of the matter is, it was all based, many of them had Finney, a strong religious component. She knew if she could infiltrate that, corrupt the leadership, abortion would be a part of the African-American mindset. And Al Sharpton is a Kojic ordained pastor by one of the
Church of God in Christ.
Yeah, one of the greatest, by one of the greatest pastors of New York City at one time. And the sadness, Kojic, Church of God in Christ, in their mission statement is against, and in no way, form or fashion, were they to endorse abortion. G.E. Patterson, God rest his soul, I thought was going to really do some great things for Kojic when, upon his passing, you know, once again turned the helm over to Bishop Charles Blake. And I've written about this and said this many times, so it's nothing new what I'm saying. I treat everybody with respect, but he did great detriment to the work of G.E. Patterson in distancing him, the Kojic churches, from the platform of the Democratic Party. When he wanted a seat at the table, he endorsed the platform, and then he would say, except for abortion. The same thing for Obamacare. Well, I'm with it all. I'm down with it all, except for the abortion section. Well, if that's in it, you're not with it. I mean, if that's in the plan, then you should just say, I'm not for the plan because of. You don't say, I'm for the plan except for that part. You know, you're already doing political gymnastics in order to stay in favor with the party. And so we have our work cut out. Margaret Sanger's ideology has worked, you know, perfectly. And I want to say to others who may call and say, well, you know, Martin Luther King accepted the Margaret Sanger Award, just as Hillary Clinton. And the difference between Hillary Clinton and others and Martin Luther King is Hillary Clinton knows the statistics and certainly knows the history. Martin Luther King did not. And listen, and all listeners need to know, in 1963, to show you how diabolical and deceitful, Planned Parenthood Federation made a national statement on the UPI or the API, or whatever that's called, AP, said they do not agree with abortion being used as a means of contraceptive. That was their national in 1963. Now, of course, it's not as with social media today. It's not certainly with as media is today. We don't know of the statements that were being made. They were basically being made for people who would operate with corporations and operate with the NAACP and operate with CORE and those groups at that time, so they would feel at ease. So when he accepted the award, as a matter of fact, he sent Claretta to accept it and give the speech. He didn't know of the sinister, diabolical plan. And in an interview in Ebony Magazine, which I have on my website, with the story of Martin Luther King, abortion, homosexual—it's abortion, homosexuality, and Martin Luther King. In that particular interview with Ebony, and I thank God for it almost daily, he clearly shows his opposition and attempt at redemptiveness for those who are guilty of abortion and also those who are guilty of homosexuality. As a matter of fact, in that interview, he says to the person who's asking him, who says he is a participant, he says he the first thing he dispels is that they were born that way. The first thing Dr. King addresses. So, and he did it quite pastorally and very, very much in a loving spirit. If you read that exchange on that interview, I was extremely impressed the way he addressed it. But of course, it was certainly not as prominent and as dominant as it is today, but nevertheless, the question was asked him. It was 1958, I believe, in that interview, and clearly against abortion and called it murder, and clearly against homosexuality, letting the individual know that they were not born that way, and that but that there was, with the intervention of God, there could be, you know, a turnaround in the individual's life. So this is why you have to understand, I become a little bit perturbed, unnerved, when both of these movements or institutions, the abortion and the same-sex marriage, attempt to phrase their effort as civil rights, which, one, you do not give civil rights to a person's sexual orientation because the orientation could be wrong. So, and also as far as an abortion, how can you claim the right for, how can you claim a right and in so doing take away the right of someone else? So how could abortion be a civil right? So, but yet the way they marketed it has been extremely skillful and very much geniusly portrayed, but yet truth would expose. And certainly iron sharpens iron, undoubtedly, is really where we have to go at this point. Leadership has to readdress its message to the people. One, first, repent, and then two, you know, not allow others to redefine. And just give me 30 seconds, because I got this thought in my mind, because you got to understand that week in July, you had Thursday an Obamacare ruling, basically where someone redefined capital S to small s, totally changed the whole basis, and five other judges went along with them. And I'm talking about Chief Justice Roberts' decision on Obamacare. Then the next day, you had them change the definition of marriage, where, once again, five judges, which was enough, basically said we're reinterpreting marriage. And then the next day, God sent a message to everybody, but once again by the use of this president, Barack Obama, and you're saying, what in the world are you talking about? He put the rainbow on the White House, once again changing the definition of the rainbow to a modern-day subterfuge or deception for a movement that is basically usurped the moral high ground, or basically knocked down the moral high ground in America to accept their definition of the fundamental building block of society. Because the rainbow will always mean that God made a covenant with mankind. And right now, we're working on the backside, the wrong side of that covenant. And he was reminding America through Barack Obama's slap in the face to all the clergy that supported them, the Bible-believing clergy, that they had prevailed. No, God was using that to America to say, the covenant is still intact, and you're going to see very shortly that I still have covenanted with this country, and he's going to show up.
I'm going to go to a break right now. If you'd like to join us on the air with a question for Dr. Clenard Howard Childress, our email address is chrisarnson@gmail.com. We are taking our listener questions via email. That's chrisarnson@gmail.com. Please include your first name, city and state of residence, and your country of residence if you live outside of the USA. And please only remain anonymous if it's a personal and private matter that you are emailing about. chrisarnson@gmail.com. Don't go away. We'll be right back with Dr. Clenard Howard Childress and Black Genocide.
Hi, I'm Chris Arnson of Iron Sharpens Iron Radio. Are you a Christian looking to align your faith and finances? Then you'll want to check out Thrivin' Financial. They're not your typical financial services provider. They're a not-for-profit Fortune 500 organization that helps their nearly 2.4 million members to be wise with money. They provide guidance that reflects your values so you can protect what matters most. They help members live generously and strengthen the communities where they live, work, and worship. Learn more about the Thrivin' story by contacting Michael Gallagher at 717-254-6433. That's 717-254-6433.
We know we were made for so much more than ordinary life.
Blending faith, finances, and generosity. That's the Thrivent story.
We were made to thrive.
Lynbrook Baptist Church on 225 Earl Avenue in Lynbrook, Long Island, is teaching God's timeless truths in the 21st century.
Our church is far more than a Sunday worship service.
It's a place of learning where the scriptures are studied and the preaching of the gospel is clear and relevant.
It's like a gym where one can exercise their faith through community involvement.
It's like a hospital for wounded souls where one can find compassionate people and healing.
We're a diverse family of all ages,
enthusiastically serving our Lord Jesus Christ.
In fellowship, play, and together.
Hi, I'm Pastor Bob Waldeman, and I invite you to come and join us here at Lynbrook Baptist Church and see all that a church can be.
Call Lynbrook Baptist at 516-599-9402. That's 516-599-9402. Or visit lynbrookbaptist.org. That's lynbrookbaptist.org.
Welcome back. This is Chris Arnson. If you've just tuned in to Iron Sharpens Iron, our guest today is Dr. Clenard Howard Childress. He is the founder and director of blackgenocide.org. And he is also involved in LEARN, and that is an acronym define the acronym again for us, Dr. Childress.
Yes, Life, Education, and Resource Network.
Life, Education, and Resource Network, which is a providence here because the radio network that this program is on is also LEARN, the Leading Edge Radio Network. So there you go. If you have any questions, we are talking about black genocide through abortion, that the abortion industry was born out of racism. This is not some kind of crazy conspiratorial theory that has no basis in fact. It is clearly documented historically that the abortion industry and Planned Parenthood arose out of the roots of racism, and that those involved in the early movement to so-called provide rights for women to have legal abortions was really a strategy to lower the number of black and minority babies being born and to eventually have enough women sterilized and enough babies aborted that the black race would no longer exist on the face of the earth. And you could even find this. This is the thing that's interesting. You could find this right from Margaret Sanger's own writings on the internet, even on sites that aren't connected to the pro-life movement. If you get the right site that has not blocked out her racist comments and the blueprint for her racist strategy, because some of the websites that are discerning enough in their evil way to recognize that they would be committing political suicide have blocked out some of the things that she has said. But if you find the right website, you could still see clearly her own writings on revealing her racism. And of course, if you go to the right library or somewhere, you could find these writings. And of course, if you go to blackgenocide.org, although they're biased because they're pro-life, they do have these writings available. And that's blackgenocide.org, blackgenocide.org. And if you could, before Pastor Ranjur Lock may jump in with a question, if you could define eugenics and what role that had to play in this whole discussion that we're having.
Well, it is the fundamental building block of Planned Parenthood. They were all involved in the eugenics movement, which is the targeting of any ethnic group for either sterilization or elimination. The sole purpose of eugenics was to socially engineer society to the liking of those who were the eugenists and not so much the natural course of nature. So right now, Margaret Sanger was tied into Lothrop Stoddard, who, as you alluded to earlier, sat on both boards. The Birth Control League, which was the name of Planned Parenthood before eugenics became a dirty word globally because of the eugenics so strong movement in Germany, Lothrop Stoddard sat with Adolf Hitler, with Eugene Fischer, who ran the eugenics movement for Adolf Hitler. They contributed to the monthly newspaper of the Birth Control League. Same people. I mean, these were people who were just basically diabolical, insidious, callous towards anyone who did not fit their definition of viability, which was only their own. So if you were outside of that of that scheme or that of their view, their social view, you were a problem and you were to be eliminated. And certainly Germany did not have the restraints that America had, and that's where it all went. And basically they sank. Now people want to say we copied Germany because of, they don't know. They copied Margaret Sanger's crew, the eugenics movement in America, and just took it to an all-new level there in Germany. So, and we have to understand that they commended them regularly in the Birth Control League's newspaper, what was going on in Germany. So when it all came crashing down, they recognized that they should not basically call themselves the Birth Control League or the eugenics or have anything attached to the name eugenics, and they changed the name to Planned Parenthood.
Yeah, sounds a lot more sweet and nice and helpful when you change it to something like that.
Sure.
Who on earth could be against helping out parents to plan their lives and so on? It may be alarming to folks there out on Long Island, where I am from, but the Cold Spring Harbor Laboratories, which are still in existence, they were the think tank originally in the earlier part of the 20th century for eugenics. And if you go to their website even today, you have to do a lot of jumping around to find it. It's not easily discovered, but they, if you finally wind up at the dark side of the Cold Spring Harbor Laboratory's history, they are honest enough to admit that eugenics played a role in their history. And what you were just saying before about America learning from the Nazis, the eugenics laboratory in Cold Spring Harbor was feeding Adolf Hitler,
yes,
with counsel and advice on what to do about the Jewish problem in Germany. And I'm, of course, using their terminology, the Jewish problem, and that Hitler may not have even progressed to or sank to the depths of evil in regard to the actual genocide of Jews without the evil counsel of this laboratory right on Long Island, New York.
Well, I didn't know that's where it was located, but your synopsis is held by many historians that are honest and objective that they would not have gone to the depths of the horrors that we learned that went on in Germany between actually 1938 and 45 if it had not been for the direct counsel of eugenics right here in this country.
Yes, and by the way, I want to strongly recommend a documentary that both myself and Pastor Roger Locke have viewed multiple times and have benefited greatly from. It's a documentary that our guest, Dr. Clenard Howard Childress, plays a role in. He was interviewed for this documentary. It's called MAFA 21, and you can find out more about that documentary at MAFA21.com. And that's spelled M as in Michael, A-A, F as in Frank, A, 21. And that's a Swahili word that means genocide, correct, Dr. Childress?
Yes, dearth, destruction, anguish, pain. And so I thought Mark Crutcher, who was the pioneer, who was not African-American, unquestionably, felt he should put his resources and his organization behind creating MAFA 21. It has probably been the greatest, best tool that we have had, except for the current Black Lives Matters movement, in reaching every segment of the African-American community and certainly the students. When we have been on campuses with the Genocide Awareness Project, that's Greg Cunningham out there in California, and we're using MIAPA 21 as provided from Life Dynamics in Denton, Texas, we find students will take it to their classroom or professors will come by, take it, and show it to their class while we're still there. And it really unquestionably bridges the gap, and it shows that we're not some right-wing religious fanatics yelling about abortion per se, but there is a systemic right now plan against African Americans that is undoubtedly still yet very much a part of our society here in this nation and needs to be addressed by we the people. And that's the other thing we also have to recognize. We the people don't know it. This is a very higher echelon, elitist group of people that do not care to educate the public on their agenda because the key thing is to operate in secrecy. But yet, once again, because of social media, because of so many venues for people to get information, their wall is crumbling. And Liza Rose, who is live action, who began her stings on Planned Parenthood and now Center for Medical Progress, has just taken it to a whole new level, impacting the credibility, not that they had any, but exposing the lack of credibility of the abortion industry, has been just phenomenal in creating a dialogue. Now, it's been far easier in these last year and a half, 2 years, with these events just birthing. I believe it's an act of God, no question. And it's ironic where they've been defunded. It has always been due to either an underground sting by Live Action's Liza Rose or the Center for Medical Progress. Now with the cold facts on body parts being sold for profit, and ironically, it's by people who were born after 1973 who are exposing them. Liza Rose, I think she's about 30, and this young man's 26 years of age, 26, and has adopted an African-American child, by the way, from a woman who he had counseled not to have an abortion. So we are living in very special times. They're very dark times. I believe these are the America right now is living on the precipice of a major response to you've sown to the wind, you have to reap the whirlwind. We have sowed the blood, innocent shedding, the shedding of innocent blood for over 40 years, 41 roughly to be exact. It is going to come back. To what degree, I don't know, but I know that it's so important for the church to take its rightful place in intercession, that God gets us through the chastisement. We don't want it to be judgment. You don't come back from that. But we're praying that America can survive and get back to its moral base.
Pastor Roger Locke, you and our guest, Dr. Childress, are both in the ministry, in the pastoral ministry, and you are obviously both very pro-life, very much believe that the lives of the unborn must be protected because they are indeed human. They are people, and to destroy that life is nothing less than murder. And at the scale that these children are being murdered is nothing less than infanticide, and it's a torturous, gruesome death for these children. You two, and correct me if I'm wrong, you two seem to be the exception with your strong, vocal, public voice against this gruesome, barbarous practice. But isn't it true that the majority of people in the pew in the African-American church at large, aren't the majority of people in the pew against abortion, even if the majority of clergy, or what seems to be the majority of clergy, silent about it? Your opinion, Pastor Locke?
Yeah, I think absolutely. I think that the heritage in the black church of not just the biblical heritage of understanding the teaching of the scriptures, but even applying them. There much of even what we talk about in terms of black genocide, we use that language, or the new slavery, sort of the next generation of the of slavery in our country, or the mistreatment and oppression of blacks. The foundation in the black church from the beginning was that we are all created in the image of God. And therefore, we all are embedded in our DNA, in our humanness. We're all embedded with a dignity. We deserve the right to live. We deserve the right to flourish in society, to flourish in the spheres that we live in. And so, therefore, to withhold that from us is unjust, just like it would be for anybody. So the people in the pew understand that. The people of the pew have heard that week in and week out. And by just a preface there, whether you're talking about an evangelical church, whether you're talking about a liberation theology church, whether you're talking about a Pentecostal church, that's one area where across the board everybody gets it. You know, at least in terms of the black community, everybody in the churches, by and large, get the fact that we're all created in the image of God, because that's so much a part of who we are, and that's so much a part of the of our story, particularly in American history. One question that I had for Dr. Childress is actually along those lines, given the way that things are in the church and the teachings that we hold in the church, and also given even the recent upswell of Black Lives Matter movements and things like that, how in the world does Planned Parenthood succeed, and how in the world have they succeeded as they have over the years? Because if you think about it, that's not the message that you're getting from the church. I have yet to hear of any pastor that would, at least from the pulpit, he may do so behind closed doors, I don't know, but at least from the pulpit, preach, in favor of abortion. Nor do I see, obviously, with especially in recent times, you know, with violence and so on going on in various black communities, I don't see folks going around saying that black lives don't matter. And yet, at the same time, in the midst of all of this, abortion numbers are still sky high, and particularly sky high within the black community. So the message is getting out somewhere, and the message is getting out somehow. And so that's the question I have is, how? What are they saying that is so effective? Or, perhaps on another side, what's going on in black culture in particular that makes their message, whatever that is, so effective?
Yeah, one of the things Martin Luther King, he always used to quote Edmund Burke, and we as preachers and as clergymen should know unquestionably that is a profound quote. All evil has to do to triumph is for good men to either say nothing, do nothing, or be silent. And often our silence is affirmation. And so therefore someone else takes the dialogue. Someone else counsels our young ladies. Someone else talks about whether or not this is a viable response to an untimely pregnancy. We may not pound the pulpit for, but we don't pound the pulpit against. And that's where the enemy takes that void and counsels. Someone's counseling your daughter. If you choose not to, somebody will. If you choose not to eat, you know, I don't stand up in the pulpit and say, I'm against people climbing up on the Empire State Building and jumping off. I'm against that. Why? But if people start jumping off, I think I better take a position in the. And that's what's not happening. Because we're not using the pulpit as Obama did to basically use that bully pulpit to get their causes, their social agenda across. And so you see Jesse Jackson or much of the NAACP leadership, if not all, Congressional Black Caucus, talking about the importance of a woman's right to choose. Now, the woman in the pew hears a message that doesn't address that. What does that say? Sublimely, especially when she's in trouble. And I understand why women choose, but they make an ill-informed choice. No one's telling them that there's a heartbeat at 18 days. No one's telling them there's brain waves at 42, child sucking his thumb at 65 days. No one's saying that. But because we didn't really articulate our message in the pulpit, we allowed someone else during a time of crisis counsel. And I, you know, you look at the young lady who, in the African American community, by the way, African American women are going to college at an alarmingly high rate, and it's a very, very a great rate, far more so than their African American male counterpart. And so she's very likely, oftentimes in her freshman year, the first child to go to college. She's there, and on one weekend, she makes an indiscretion. Mom's talking about her at the beauty parlor. Dad's talking about her at the barbershop. My baby girl's at Spelman. My baby girl's at Dartmouth or whatever. And mom is beaming, and she goes out one weekend and gets herself in a position, puts herself in a position, and she's pregnant. What do you think she's going to do? Who, I mean, you will have, as you stated, you will have clergy weigh this and say, listen, dear, you got three more years to go. Your grade point average is just where it needs to be. This is an interruption. You made an error. Don't compound the error by following through with the pregnancy. She won't hear, chances are, in the African-American church, this is not a part of our message, even though at 1,786 a day, 52% of African American pregnancy. These are my. This is not my data. This is Planned Parenthood's data.
Wow.
So this is the Center for Disease data.
Wow.
So this is not Christian, you know.
Right.
Mathematicians getting together, Christian.
It's not biased for the pro-life movement.
This is from the government or from the very perpetrators of crime themselves, Planned Parenthood. So she is going to do that. Chances are she is going to do that for the sake of the family, for the sake of her future, for the hopes of having children when she would like to have children. But because the child is not personalized, the personhood, which was the foundation of Martin Luther King's own message, was personhood. Because personhood is not realized, and the child for so long was described as a blob of tissue by Cecil Richards, the chairperson, the executive operating officer of Planned Parenthood. Of course, the irony of this now is that Cecil Richards has to come back to the mic and explain that that blob of tissue, we sell the arms, we sell the liver, we sell the heart, we sell the brain. In other words, we were lying to you when we told you it was a blob of tissue. That is a person. And America, and as well as the world, has always tried to come up with solutions for violating a biblical principle. No sex before marriage.
We have to go to a break right now. If you'd like to join us on the air, we do have a couple of questions already from our listeners. If you'd like to join us on the air, our email address is chrisarnzen@gmail.com. Chris Arnzen, that's chrisarnzen@gmail.com. Don't go away. We'll be right back with Dr. Clennard Howard Childress and Pastor Ronjor Locke as we discuss abortion, a blueprint for black genocide. Don't go away.
Are you a Christian looking to align your faith and finances? Then you'll want to check out Thrivent Financial. We're not your typical financial services provider. We're a not-for-profit Fortune 500 organization that helps our nearly 2.4 million members be wise with money. We provide guidance that reflects your values so you can protect what matters most. We help members live generously and strengthen the communities where they live, work, and worship. Learn more about the Thrivent story by contacting me, Mike Gallagher, financial consultant, at 717-254-6433. Again, 717-254-6433.
We know we were made for so much more than ordinary life. Lending faith, finances, and generosity. That's the Thrivent story.
We were made to thrive.
I'm James White of Alpha and Omega Ministries. The New American Standard Bible is perfect for daily reading or in-depth study. Used by pastors, scholars, and everyday readers, the NASB is widely embraced and trusted as a literal and readable Bible translation. The NASB offers clarity and readability while maintaining high accuracy to the original languages, which the NASB is known for. The NASB is available in many editions like a topical reference Bible. Researched and prepared by biblical scholars devoted to accuracy, the new Topical Reference Bible includes contemporary topics relevant to today's issues. From compact to giant print Bibles, find an NASB that fits your needs very affordably at nasbible.com. Trust, discover, and enjoy the NASB for yourself today. Go to nasbible.com. That's nasbible.com.
Tired of box store Christianity, of doing church in a warehouse with all the trappings of a rock concert? Do you long for a more traditional and reverent style of worship? And how about the preaching? Perhaps you've begun to think that in-depth biblical exposition has vanished from Long Island. Well, there's good news. Wading River Baptist Church exists to provide believers with a meaningful and reverent worship experience, featuring the systematic exposition of God's Word. And this loving congregation looks forward to meeting you. Call them at 631-929-3512 for service times, 631-929-3512, or check out their website at wrbc.us. That's wrbc.us.
Welcome back. This is Chris Arnes, and if you just tuned into Iron Sharpens Iron, we are discussing abortion, a blueprint for black genocide. Our guests today are Dr. Clennard Howard Childress, the founder of blackgenocide.org, and co-hosting with me in the studio is Pastor Ron Jorlock of the First Baptist Church of Brooklyn, Maryland, not Brooklyn, New York, Brooklyn, Maryland. And we are discussing this very vital issue that is virtually unknown in mainstream media, is purposely being withheld from mainstream media. And if you have any questions, our email address is chrisarnzen@gmail.com. chrisarnzen@gmail.com. And I do have a question from an anonymous listener that asks, has the tide turned where more white children are being aborted? I am continually hearing that black women are more prone to keep their children and not have them aborted than white women are. Please explain. Well, that's an interesting and good question. Dr. Childress?
Well, yes, and if they're talking about an individual situation that faces an abortion, once again, though they are the targeted community, African Americans are still having more abortions, but the Caucasian community, the collateral damage is now almost at the 2.3. And what is that 2.3? In order to replace the existing population, you're supposed to have 2.2. Each woman has 2.2 children. Right now, the Caucasian population is at 2.3. just above. The African-American population is beneath replacement level. That's even with the addition of our brothers and sisters from Jamaica, Trinidad, Tobago, Haiti, Uganda, Africa. Even with immigration, it's still beneath replacement level, because many of those people do become citizens and then are included in the census. And even with that, it's beneath the replacement level. So the culture itself is pro-death, and the culture itself, to be honest with you, and as a Baptist preacher, you know, I look at 2 Timothy, I think it's the third chapter, seekers of pleasure more than seekers of God. I will accept anything that will not interrupt my quest for pleasure, and that's what abortion does. It's being used as a contraceptive. So the white community is taking its hits too, trust me, but it's not the targeted group.
CJ from Lindenhurst, Long Island, has a question for both of you, Pastor Ron Jorlock and Dr. Childress. Why has it seemed that the black clergy were more quick to publicly oppose same-sex marriage, which is not exactly a politically correct thing to do, and yet are still largely silent on the abortion issue? That's an excellent question. Pastor Locke, if you could start.
Let me think about that for just a couple seconds. I think if I were to start somewhere, I think that homosexuality is a more visible sin, both outside of black churches and inside of black churches.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you know, the running joke in different black churches is, you know, that the choir director, you know, or somebody like that, you know, is having struggles with his sexuality and so on. So I think it's easier to oppose. Whereas when it comes to abortion, there's the things that are, think of it like a spider web, you know, the things that are attached to it. It's almost like if I touch this, then I've got to touch that also, and these things also. And I don't know if there are the ones that won't speak out, if they have the courage, if you will, to deal with all of those other issues involved as well.
Dr. Childress, you have your own comments?
Yeah, and the passage is very accurate. We've been, but where it, the difference is, abortion just became an issue in 1973. Homosexuality was an issue from day one.
Mm-hmm.
So there's clear dialogue, clear understanding, especially in the black church, we don't you don't go that way. Even though there is the eroding away of perceived leadership. NAACP celebrates same-sex marriage. Congressional Black Caucus, the president, is bashing pastors who will not marry two men or two women. So that is eroding because you don't have the sanctity of life as paramount. I believe once the sanctity of life begins to erode, every other law after will begin to erode. But homosexuality, we had that discussion in the 50s, in the 40s, in the 1800s. We know that's wrong in the church. Abortion is a new phenom, so to speak. 1973 was quite clear. Anything that would disrupt the child's birth previously would be just unthinkable, but what evil has done, it has made something that was should be unconscionable, unthinkable, very much viable for women, means for women to choose for a pregnancy.
So what you're saying is obviously abortions occurred before 1973, but you're saying they weren't palatable in the public mind. Right.
Those of you that watched me off of 21, when the powers that be were trying to figure out how to get African Americans embrace it, they used the study of a sociologist by the name of Teese, and after a year, he came back in 1972, by the way. In 1972, he came back with his findings to the United Nations Population Control and Planned Parenthood. What were the findings? If you make it legal, African Americans will embrace it. The rest is history.
We have Arnie in Perry County, Pennsylvania, who asks, what do you think about the common liberal response to the pro-life movement, that those who are most in favor of defending the life of unborn children have little concern for their well-being after they are born? Perhaps if we could start with Dr. Childress, and then perhaps Pastor Locke, you can answer that after.
Well, you know, that's always a common, you know, you hear that all the time, retort to those who are defending life. Now, first of all, sometimes that's really an insulting response to the social activists. And so, in other words, if I'm not in the position to adopt and I'm not financially stable enough to take someone in, I shouldn't say anything about life, about you murdering someone else. But anyway, but you'd be surprised and shocked. I mentioned earlier this gentleman who is the president of the Center for Medical Progress basically has taken in an African-American child he counseled a African-American woman to have instead of abort. I myself, in my lifetime, have taken in, I think, at least 12 people, teenagers or grammar school-age children who were troubled, and I was counseling with those parents, and they wound up in my home for some as long as 10 to 12 years. So it is something that we do just because we're the church, but yet, if I'm not in the position to, if I cannot, for whatever reason, does that mean I remain silent on the slaughter of the innocent to make you feel comfortable? I mean, the litmus test, that, you know, whether I'm credible or not, is did I take in somebody? Did I adopt someone? No. I think we don't want to fall into that trap of having to qualify to speak about life. We speak about life because we have conscience, and that is your only true indicator of your own relationship with the Father, is your own conscience. He gave you that. And why did he give you conscience? Because it would talk to you and tell you what is right and what is wrong. And we, whether we're Christian or not, I don't care what anybody says, everyone on this planet knows that's wrong. But whether or not we'll yield to conscience, whether or not we'll yield to the Holy Spirit, is another question. But everyone knows. You innately know. The law is written upon your heart. You innately know that is wrong.
Pastor Locke, you have any comments?
Yeah, agreeing with Pastor Childers, I don't believe that quality of life affects the right to life. So to say that somebody say that a baby that is going to live, that is not aborted, grows up and doesn't get, you know, to live in, say, middle class or higher conditions, therefore, the way the argument seems to go, therefore, it would be better for the baby to be aborted than to have to go through any type of poverty or anything like that. That's ludicrous. For somebody that would pose that, I'm not saying that that our listener here holds that view. Hopefully, he's just bringing it up just to pose an alternative question. But I think that anybody that would pose that question, that would be the knee jerk response that I would have to that. And also to say that there wouldn't be anybody there that would want to take in a child and want to give them the help that they need and the nourishment that they need and the nurture that they need so that they could flourish in life. I believe that that's a challenge that many churches would love to accept. I think that there are many Bible-believing families, Christ-following families, who would love to have the opportunity to adopt, and particularly many that battle with infertility, many that are in situations where they're not able to bear children on their own. They would be more than happy to provide an alternative to abortion by giving them the child a home where they could take care of them.
Susan from Newville, Pennsylvania, asked, do you think that a part of Barack Obama's strategy to reduce poverty and crime in the inner cities is to reduce the number of black babies being born? Well, obviously, you would have to read his mind to know that he was consciously using that as a strategy, because he would never dare say that in public. But that was Margaret Sanger's old blueprint, wasn't it?
Yes, and in the Soviet Union, the average woman has, if you're sitting down, 17 abortions. Okay?
Wow.
The crime rate in the Soviet Union is higher than any place in America. Okay?
Wow.
New York City, Chicago, you name it. Okay? So, obviously, abortion is not the answer to lower crime. That is a sociological study with a demographic, basically, that you can understand. And so we have to look at and understand that's a moral issue. Well, you know why and if you want to ask a preacher, maybe I'm old-fashioned because of my age, you took prayer out of the school. You took God out of every place where children could develop conscience and develop a right and wrong and recognize there is a higher authority, and we unquestionably are now in a time where you have the unchurched children, the unchurched generation, and they are callous towards right and callous towards what is godly. So, you know, I think of my day starting off in school, we first started off with reading a psalm, having a prayer, saluting the flag. Well, gosh, after that every day, how bad are you going to be? I mean, as time went on, they eliminated those things. They eliminated morality. We didn't have to call our concert a winter concert. It was a Christmas concert. We had Jesus portrayed on stage. We read the scripture. We knew the Bible stories. And a lot of us, you know, not many of us, but I was one of those kids who did not go to church. My parents were working two and three jobs, and they didn't take us to church. We didn't go to church except on Easter. And so much of my understanding of the scriptures came from them telling us stories. I had a missionary that lived on the third floor of our home, and he would come down and she would come down together, tell us stories, or from our plays, our pageants in school. I learned, you learn the Christmas story, you learn about the, you know, the rudimentary building blocks of the faith that were portrayed on stage through our different plays and roles. So that's gone. And so your abortion, reducing the numbers, certainly you have a living example that you can point to and say, it doesn't help there, why would you think it would help here? There are not, if at all, any African Americans in the Soviet Union. This is a human moral issue.
And of course, even if statistically you could say that it lowered crime just because there were less people on the planet, murder is never to be viewed as a pragmatic way of solving an issue, and the murder of unborn children is nothing less than murder, and abortion is nothing less than infanticide. And it's interesting how a baby is a blob of tissue or a fetus or whatever you want to call it if it is not wanted, but all of a sudden that same baby in the womb, at the same stage of development, people will, well, have you picked a name for the baby yet? Yes. We're calling the baby Michael, or we're calling the baby Christina, or we're calling the baby Albert, or whatever you want to, name you want to pick. And they say, can I feel the baby kick? And on and on. And it's interesting that if a pregnant woman is murdered and the baby dies, the person can be charged with double homicide. And isn't it interesting that now the National Organization of Women were actually originally protesting that a very well-known individual accused of murdering his wife who was pregnant, which eventually led to the death of the baby, or simultaneously led to the death of the baby, when he was being charged with double homicide for the killing of his wife and child, National Organization of Women initially protested this, did they not? You remember the case?
Yes, and it's not the first time, and which also lets women to know this certainly isn't about women. The National Organization of Women is not really about women. It's about an ideology. It's about what we believe
right. Is
our sacred cow, and it's abortion.
Right.
Abortion, and that is a non-person. End of story. Don't ever bring it up again. That's the way they view their agenda and view life and view women. And I think it was you or someone, basically, or the thought came in my mind that these groups have done more to destroy women in the womb than any organization ever on the planet. Now, NARAL, Planned Parenthood, but yet it is women who more or less that support these groups wholeheartedly as quote unquote women's rights. Well, that's ludicrous. But anyway, go ahead.
We're going to our final break, and this is your last opportunity. We have a half hour left for you to write in emails with questions. That's your last opportunity today. That is. For during our live program, it's chrisarnzen@gmail.com. chrisarnzen@gmail.com is our email address. Please include your first name, your city and state of residence, and your country of residence if outside of the USA. We'll be right back after these messages, so please don't go away.
Thrivent Financial is not your typical financial services provider. As a membership organization, we help Christians be wise with money and live generously every day. And for the fourth year in a row, we were named one of the world's most ethical companies by the Ethisphere Institute, a leading international think tank dedicated to the creation, advancement, and sharing of best practices in business ethics. Contact me, Mike Gallagher, financial consultant, at 717-254-6433. Again, 717-254-6433 to learn more about the Thrivent Difference.
We know we were made for so much more than ordinary life.
Blending faith, finances, and generosity. That's the Thrive-It story.
We were made to thrive.
Lynbrook Baptist Church on 225 Earl Avenue in Lynbrook, Long Island, is teaching God's timeless truths in the 21st century.
Our church is far more than a Sunday worship service.
It's a place of learning where the scriptures are studied and the preaching of the gospel is clear and relevant.
It's like a gym where one can exercise their faith through community involvement.
It's like a hospital for wounded souls where one can find compassionate people and healing.
We're a diverse family of all ages,
enthusiastically serving our Lord Jesus Christ.
In fellowship, play, and together.
Hi, I'm Pastor Paul Waldman, and I invite you to come and join us here at Lynbrook Baptist Church and see all that a church can be.
Call Lynbrook Baptist at 516-599-9402. That's 516-599-9402. Or visit lynbrookbaptist.org. That's lynbrookbaptist.org.
I'm James White of Alpha and Omega Ministries. The New American Standard Bible is perfect for daily reading or in-depth study. Used by pastors, scholars, and everyday readers, the NASB is widely embraced and trusted as a literal and readable Bible translation. The NASB offers clarity and readability while maintaining high accuracy to the original languages, which the NASB is known for. The NASB is available in many editions, like a topical reference Bible. Researched and prepared by biblical scholars devoted to accuracy, the new topical reference Bible includes contemporary topics relevant to today's issues. From compact to giant print Bibles, find an NASB that fits your needs very affordably at nasbible.com. Trust, discover, and enjoy the NASB for yourself today. Go to nasbible.com. That's nasbible.com.
Tired of box store Christianity? Of doing church in a warehouse with all the trappings of a rock concert? Do you long for a more traditional and reverent style of worship? And how about the preaching? Perhaps you've begun to think that in-depth biblical exposition has vanished from Long Island. Well, there's good news. Wading River Baptist Church exists to provide believers with a meaningful and reverent worship experience, featuring the systematic exposition of God's Word. And this loving congregation looks forward to meeting you. Call them at 631-929-3512 for service times. 631-929-3512. Or check out their website at wrbc.us. That's wrbc.us.
Welcome back. This is Chris Arnzen, and this is your last opportunity to email us a question. Over the next 27 minutes or so, to chrisarnzen@gmail.com, chrisarnzen@gmail.com. Please include your first name, city and state of residence, and your country of residence, if outside of the USA. And we are discussing abortion, a blueprint for black genocide, with our guest, Dr. Clenard Howard Childress of blackgenocide.org. And my co-host has been Pastor Ronjor Locke of the First Baptist Church of Brooklyn, Maryland. And this has been indeed an enlightening and fascinating discussion. And we do have a question from Christian in Carlisle, Pennsylvania, who wants to know, I have heard that even the venerable NAACP is involved in some kind of a huge cover-up regarding this whole topic of discussion, in that the black babies are the number one target and have always been the primary reason for the abortion industry to exist. Is this true about the NAACP, and do you know of anybody who is actually pro-life who has an office at the NAACP? Well, that's a very good question, or a series of questions, Dr. Childress.
Well, that is a spiritual vendetta that I have against the NAACP. Unquestionably, they have shielded and censored any information on the detriment and the impact of abortion on the black community. I have just came from a protest in July in Philadelphia, and maybe she's referring to the group out there with the Confederate flag. That was us, blackgenocide.org, learn. And more or less, basically, what most people don't know is that the NAACP will not allow a resolution to be read on the floor when it comes to the impact of abortion. Macon submitted a resolution. They censored it. Macon, Dayton, Ohio, Cincinnati. There's one I'm missing. Possibly Atlanta. The state president from Atlanta also made a request for the resolution to be read. It was denied. First of all, you need to know that's breaking their own rules. The resolution doesn't have to come to a vote, but all resolutions must be read openly on the floor. But yet, they chose to censor it. Why? Because of the money they get from Planned Parenthood, the money they get from Now, NARAL, and that's part of the deal. This is not discussed. This does not come up. Because you cannot debate this. We challenge anyone to debate us. And I don't want to be, I don't want to go in and have a discussion in the NAACP. I know doctors, Dr. John Diggs of Boston, Massachusetts, Hayward Henderson of College Park, Texas, many others, you know, I forgot our sister's name out there in California, can have that discussion with the NAACP. But I will continually have it outside of the NAACP until they have it inside.
And one of the things that I said earlier about the it seems that the clergy within the African American church at large is silent about that, or relatively silent. Do you, from your own communication, and I'll ask this of both you and my co-host Pastor Locke, in your communication with fellow pastors in the black church, do you think that they are their silence is due to a lack of personal conviction over this issue, or out of fear of being ostracized by others who believe this will thwart progress in the community because they know that the Democratic Party and the liberal political machine will cease to help them financially in other ways?
Well, I think that it is an issue of fear. I think that you have, as pastors, we're called to be strong and courageous, just like what the Lord said to Joshua in Joshua 1. We're called to be strong and courageous. There's a reason that he said that to Joshua. It's because he had Canaanites to fight. And they didn't need a leader that was going to be a coward. They need a leader who is going to be courageous and who is going to be strong. I believe it's the same thing for us as pastors. We're not picking up swords and spears and things like that, but we're going up against a movement in our society and in the world that will take no prisoners. And I think that there are a lot of pastors who are called to protect the sheep that are, for lack of a better term, cowards when it comes to this issue. They lack the courage to stand up, and even if it means that they're going to have to give their life, you know, for the protection of their sheep, they're going to have to give their lives for the protection of their sheep. But there are a lot of folks who I don't know who are willing to count that cost. And I think that if that's the case, then they need to find another position to be in, because we need guys that are going to be in the pastorate who are going to be willing to tell the truth, even if it means that they have to suffer for it.
Any thoughts on that, Dr. Childress?
I think he summed it up quite well. That's the whole reason. They don't want to come up against the party, and they get recognition from that party. Oftentimes, their prestige or their position in their town is based on harmony with the party, and I think he hit the nail right on the head. It is fear. Let's not dress it up any other way. He's absolutely right.
Isn't it interesting how forming stereotypes about anyone's race or ethnicity is usually viewed as being bigoted and hateful, and you shouldn't say that all black people like the same kind of food or are best in certain athletic endeavors, or on and on. You could go on with the list of the stereotypes, but for some reason to say that all black people vote alike is viewed as something that the liberals love to hear. Am I right on that?
Well, there's no question, and it's a sad thing. And I believe what is happening right now, I believe if you're ever going to really challenge the grassroots, not the perceived leadership. You know, I'm not going to go to Al Sharpton, Jesse, and all that echelon there, but the people they represent. If I could tell a funny story, I think it sums it up very well. I was at Philadelphia. We were talking to the NAACP delegates. We had 8 very graphic signs outside. One of them I mentioned, the Confederate flag, evil done to us, next to an aborted fetus, evil done by us. Certain things of that sort were out there. There were 8. A woman comes out. We had great dialogue, great exchanges, took cards. But this woman comes out. She takes pictures of every car, every sign we have. We had them on 4 different corners. I'm bringing this to my city. I'm not going to say the name of the person or the city, but it'll be so you understand. It gets the heart of what I'm saying. She says, I'm bringing this to my city. I'm getting my people involved. And we said, this is great. And, you know, my wife went over and spoke with her, and she said, here's my card. You're coming to my city with the, you know, we call it the All Black Life Matters Project. So finally, she said, well, would you like to talk to my husband? He's leading this. And she says, okay, let me speak. And we're talking, yes, you know, I am from the National Action Committee, and I'm the vice president of my group in this particular city. And I look at her, I've got to get Al Sharpton involved in this. And so I didn't laugh. I kept a straight face. I continued the conversation. But it just showed me the ignorance of the politics of abortion.
Yeah, and I was even discussing at lunch with Pastor Rondra Locke, who's my co-host today, I was discussing the fact that clearly the abortion industry would never have reached the height that it is at now and the power that it is at now without the help and assistance of Republicans, too. This is not just a Democratic Party issue. Republicans, as I was discussing with Pastor Locke, and he agreed with me, they are by and large cowards when it comes to this issue. And even when they, for the use of tickling the ears of their more conservative constituents who are pro-life, they will throw the bone of pro-life occasionally. But why aren't they talking about the things that you are talking about on our program? Why aren't they specifically saying things in public behind a microphone to Hillary Clinton? Why did you accept the Margaret Sanger Award when the woman was a Nazi sympathizer? It can be clearly documented from history that she wanted to annihilate the black race from the face of the earth. She was a racist through and through. And abortion was born out of the racial hatred of white elitists. Why are you accepting that award and supporting this industry? Why aren't the Republicans just saying it as sweet and as simple as that?
Well, I'm telling you something, one did, and he was the senator from Kentucky. I don't know his name.
Rand Paul?
Was it? Let me tell you something, he ripped her to pieces on that one. He was very eloquent, very knowledgeable, but I'm sure he noticed, as well as the House and all those who are aware of it, how the media did not want in any way, form, or fashion put that out. It never, this is something that I believe they got from C-SPAN, and even C-SPAN didn't make a big deal about it, and you're absolutely right. There isn't a lot of courage amongst Republicans to make this an issue, or they don't feel it's an issue, or they don't feel the moral challenge to take this on, because it is, they are going to take some hits on this. And I went to speak at the Democratic Convention at the request of Democrats for Life. Yes, there is such an organization. And I came, this is in 2008, and I forgot the sociologist. So, as a matter of fact, who used to come quite a bit on Focus on the Family, which is now, he's now been banned from it because of his shifting on a lot of the ideas of the culture. But he stood up in the convention and said, the Republicans had both houses and the president and did absolutely nothing with this. Why are they making it an issue when we get both houses. And unfortunately, he's absolutely right. They did. We did, you know, George Bush, and we had both houses, and very, you know, really nothing. What George Bush's mindset was this: I'll hold the line. And I'm going to tell you something, and the listeners may not agree with me. I agree with him on that, personally. Why? Because I never, and this is why we're suffering now. You cannot depend on the legislature to legislate morality. That's the job of the church. We had to knock on doors. Just do what the LBGT did. We have to lobby. We have to be on the streets. We had to make our position on the issues known instead of sitting back, laid back, behind stained glass windows, as Martin Luther King talked about in the letter from a Birmingham jail, and allow others to take that fight. They're not ordained for that fight. The church is. And then we're to influence the legislatures through us influencing the grassroots and the people. If that doesn't happen now, goodbye, America. Just plain and simple. Let's just be for real about it.
Pastor Rondrelock?
Yeah, I have a question for you, Pastor. In terms of the church's role in this culture, in this abortion culture, we obviously want to cultivate people who care about life. And we want people who are going to care for both the unborn and the born. Particularly in terms of the born, my question has to do with the mothers. There are obviously, with all the numbers, the number of abortions that have been committed, even in recent years, that means that obviously there are a lot of mothers that have committed abortion. What can the church do, or churches do, to counsel and to care for women both prior to and even after committing an abortion?
Well, especially with some of the Pentecostal and the Kojic and some of the staunch Baptist churches, they have to realize those women are in your pews, okay? They're there. And right now, so many pastors want to be in a role of denial. That's not happening here. It is. Unfortunately, it is. It's very secretive. You know, on Wednesday night prayer meeting, the woman doesn't stand up and testify. Well, you know, I want to thanks be to God that I had my abortion last week and everything's all right now. You know, you're not going to hear that. You know, it's secretive. It's covert. It is very depressing. And this is a secret that some say, if you listen to some of the Silent No More women who are talking about it, they carried all their lives from when they were 16 or 14, 15, and they say they affected every relationship they were ever in after that until they got free from it by confession and just talking to the Lord. Not necessarily even a public confession, just admitting that was wrong and going on. So we have to first admit there is a problem and then seek out not all men, but, you know, women who are willing to stand in the gap there. One woman, once again, let me go back to Philadelphia. She's coming out. She's discussing the pictures. She's a minister. She's a delegate. And through about 45 minutes into the conversation with another woman who had, you know, we had a team about between 22 and 25, just broke. I mean, bawling. And they're holding each other. I'm wondering what's going on at first, and then I kind of put it together. Oh, my gosh, she must have had this and never really discussed it, and that was the case. And she said, I feel so free now. And this was a pastor who was a delegate, who was one of the leading NAACP delegates, was out there in discussion, and about 20 minutes or so into the discussion, this happened, and it was just because my deaconess talked about her experience being on that abortion table and the pain that she felt upon going through with the abortion and how she lives with it today. She felt led to share that with her and brotherly. That was it. So that discussion needs to be had. We need to recognize the problem. And I think every pastor knows how to approach it in his congregation. God will give him a strategy. Every demographic is different. Every church, you'd be surprised sometimes, is kind of different. in the approach. But one thing we do know, the discussion, there has to be the means to have that discussion. We have to be reconciliatory. We have to understand, as Martin Luther King used to say, where there is darkness, the people will sin. So it's not so much those who sin, but those who create the darkness. America created this darkness. Roe versus Wade created this darkness, and it's entrapped so many women, and we need to have the discussion in the church.
And I want to just return for a little bit to the whole Darwinian evolution lie that basically was a perfect way to anesthetize people about this horrific act of killing the unborn. Charles Darwin was clearly a racist, and the whole concept of killing people in the womb that were being viewed as closer to the ape on the evolutionary chart seemed quite less of a horrific crime to commit. And another thing that frustrates me is that you will never hear Republicans, when they are routinely asked by a liberal reporter or journalist, do you believe in evolution? As if this is a person is running for a scientist position. And they will routinely be very nervous in their response and hem and haw, or very often will say they are believers of evolution. The better response should be, do you mean that teaching that was made popular by Charles Darwin in his book On the Origin of Species by Means of Natural Selection or the Preservation of Favored Races in the Struggle for Life? Why is this such a secret that this was the full title of Darwin's book? It's easily verifiable. And yet you don't have people intelligently responding to these questions. It's just infuriating. Just out of curiosity, since you are two black men in ministry, have either of your churches, or do you know of predominantly black churches that have been approached by liberal evolutionist groups that want to put on seminars and conferences teaching the truths, quote, that men evolved from apes? Do you hear about this approach being given to black Americans? I've never heard of one such an instance where a seminar of that kind took place, but you hear about it in predominantly white audiences a lot. Am I right that this needs to be brought to the public's attention more often, and it's oddly silent?
I was going to wait to the pastor. I thought maybe he did get approached. I haven't.
No, not in my circles, not in my circles. But I will say that really is the linchpin, I think, to this entire thing. The hard thing is we would probably be shocked as Americans to find how much Darwinian thought and Darwinian thinking has permeated our culture. If you're going to deal with the Darwinian influence on abortion and so on, you've got to deal with the Darwinian influence in all of American culture. Because really, by and large, I think that if you were to really pry and analyze the culture that we live in, I think that the predominant religion among us is Darwinism.
I would agree. And if for those of you out there have not seen My Alpha 21, my good friend Connie Eller, she's from St. Louis, a pro-life activist, African-American woman, she brings up that discussion on the title of the book, but yet they took out in later writing that reference to through natural selection. So,
and the preservation of favored races, that's the key.
Right. And so basically they knew then that would not be politically correct, as she points out then. So in other words, the whole thing would be subterfuge. It would be a means to seduce unknowingly or unwillingly and really prey upon our own misconceptions of race and our own relationship is because the elitists have always thought to keep the racial divide for their own manipulation of middle class whites against or poor whites, middle class whites against middle class blacks or poor blacks. That has been a means of strategy that has been used quite effectively, but yet once again, God would have said, well, you know, I've given you the church, and those barriers were supposed to have come down, and we have to be making sure that they're not in our pulpits, in our churches, but, you know, as Dr. Albeda King always states in many of her addresses, the quote in Hebrews, you know, we are all one race, we are all one people, and that basically exposes prejudice, exposes bigotry, that we don't proceed from there. On any false premises, and so therefore anyone coming with that type of doctrine or teaching would be exposed for what it really is.
And as you know, Dr. Childress, I have contacted you on a number of occasions to get more Ma'afa DVDs to put them in the hands of the right people. I had one acquaintance who was a Muslim convert to Christianity, a black individual who is a member of a Kojic church, Church of God in Christ congregation. And I said to him, you've got to view this. And he did, because he was totally unaware of the origins of Planned Parenthood and the racist roots of the abortion industry. He watched it and he called me up and he said, I can't believe what I just saw. This is amazing and disturbing. He couldn't believe it. And I said, well, you got to show your pastor this. And he said, he's not ready for this. I said, well, if you believe he's not ready for it, that means you really have to show your pastor this. And don't you think that's what needs to be done? If all of these clergy people are either ignorant or frightened to declare the truth, the people in the pews have really got to start standing up then. If the majority of people in the pews in the African-American community are really pro-life at heart, they really have to start being much more aggressive to their pastors who are overseeing them about this, don't they?
No doubt, I think, but that was a very good example of the pews having an assessment of the spiritual climate in their church. And I think he is now under the mandate to show him. But why should he even have that perception in his church? Obviously, he's heard some things that possibly would... He is reluctant to even give that to his black pastor. And so we need to think about that.
And I have another dear black friend who is biblically literate, quite a brilliant individual, and he is right on the money with... much, if not most, of his theology, and yet this issue, he refused to watch the Maffa documentary because he said, oh, before even watching it, he said, it's nothing but Republican propaganda, and no matter what I said in opposition to that, that the documentary exposes the culprits from both sides of the aisle, both Republican and Democrat, who created this machinery of evil. That both sides are guilty of this, and people have just got to start spreading the word about MAFA 21, MAAFA21.com. I want to thank both you, Dr. Childress, and Pastor Ronger Locke for being my guest today, and their websites are blackgenocide.org, and Pastor Ronger Locke, your website is firstbaptistbrooklyn.org.
That's correct.
And I look forward to having you both back on this program. I thank everybody for listening today, especially those who took the time to write in questions. I want you all to always remember for the rest of your lives that Jesus Christ is a far, far greater Savior than you are a sinner. God bless, and we look forward to receiving your questions for our guests tomorrow and the remainder of the week on Iron Sharpens Iron.